Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
What's happening, guys? Happy Tuesday! And thank you for joining another special episode of Your Welcome. UFC 305 is just days away, and coming up on today's show, I'm going to get into some of the heat between Adesanya and Du Plessis. Plus, Merab is going at it with Coach Tim Welch. Plus, Errol Hawani put out a disgusting tweet. I'm going to get into all of that later. Let's begin with this. Dricus Du Plessis' coach uses a cattle prod in practice and zaps athletes that are doing a technique wrong. Did you guys see the headline? Very good coach, very successful. He's got a world champion. He uses a cattle prod to show his athletes if they're doing something wrong. What do you guys think? I mean, what do you think about that? Kerry Kolot's father used to do this very thing, and Kerry Kolot talked about it. And Kerry's relationship with his father stayed intact. It was just fine. But Kerry spoke to that very point and said, if you're going to do that, you got to have the right kid. That was Kerry's exact words. You have to have the right kid. You cannot just go around with a cattle prod, and then when practice ends, get in the car and drive home together and act like everything is fine. It was a very compelling statement. And Dricus's coach uses a cattle prod. Do you believe it? I mean, it's one of those things where we have to start with that. Like, it's so unbelievable what I'm witnessing that I'm questioning if that was theatrics. I'm questioning that. It is a very tough thing just on its surface. Like, this big, beautiful sport that we have, if you break it down to its smallest denominator, that's the practice room. That is the gyms and the clubs and the groups of people that get together, set a couple of hours a day aside to work on this goal, and you build your way up. And it would be a very difficult thing to get somebody to pay you, to pay gym dues every month, to get somebody's parents to pay the gym dues, knowing I'm dropping my child off to be punched and kicked. I'll pick him up in 2 hours, and I'll pay you every 30 days, right? I mean, just like conceptually, the gym business is a very difficult one. And now you involve electrocution. And I'm just wondering, do I believe that that happened? Do I believe that that's real? Do I believe that that wasn't just somehow theatrics for television? But it's a very weird concept. Like, what is so hard to believe that somebody's going to have a cattle prod that zaps somebody? What is so hard to believe after you've already explained that you're paying monthly dues to a coach to enforce upon you, in the best of situations, that you're going to be punched and kicked about the head, base, chest and neck, right? I mean, it's one of those things where it's hard enough. It's hard enough to believe that these gyms even stay open. I remember Team Quest when I started, it was at a car lot. It wasn't a gym. It couldn't be a gym. There would be no way that anybody could organize a gym and bring in enough revenue to pay the lease each month, to pay to keep the lights on, to pay for somebody to have running water so that they could use a bathroom and or use a shower after the workout. Like, this was not realistic. So we were in the back of a car lot, but everybody was. Everybody was in their garage. They were in their living room, and they moved the coffee table out of the way. It wasn't until well after 2001 when the first gym opened up that was doing something called mixed martial arts. Before then, you get a boxing workout over here, and you get a wrestling workout on this day. You and your buddy get a DVD, and you try something called an arm bar. It was just a very different time. So do I believe? I'm well aware that we've evolved. I'm well aware that this little niche sport is now mainstream. This small fringe thing that was only a dream can now produce a living for certain people. I'm well aware of that. But do I believe that we have grown to the extent that you could use a cattle prod and get anybody to come back? It's a tough one for me, right? And if you had the backstory, which is, hey, man, that thing looks really scary, and it's really not. It makes a noise, and there's this little electric. It really doesn't feel very bad. Like even if you had that backstory, I don't know from a marketing standpoint, just conceptually, if you could get anybody to walk through that door. Hey, guys, I want to train here. Hey, I want to come in here. I heard you do great things. I heard you produce UFC champions. I heard you shock people with cattle prods. Like, I'm just not seeing. I'm not seeing how that all ties in. And I'm very curious about this, by the way. Like, this is a top coach. This is a coach who has a world champion. There aren't very many of those. There are not very many of those guys walking around. Now you got to have training partners for him. And what's a training partner get? To be punched in the head and face and kicked in the legs all day, right? It's one of these. It's an interesting spot. I don't know. I don't know. Would that work? Would that work with you? What kind of person are you? Would you giggle? Would you think that was funny? Because at some point, you're going to do a technique wrong, right? I mean, you have to. Just conceptually, you have to. If the person that does a move wrong gets zapped, and you don't get zapped, by default, it would mean that you didn't do anything wrong. Well, if you didn't do anything wrong, then you don't need him training you in the first place. Like, it sounds like you got it all figured out. And meanwhile, if you are getting things wrong and you're getting zapped, is it a fatigue issue? Is it a technique issue? Is it just that your opponent did it better? It starts to get a little bit philosophical as to why am I getting zapped and this guy isn't getting zapped? Is it a cool thing? Is it something that people find interesting? I've seen punishments in practice, and we never called them punishments. We called it discipline. But it was in the form of push-ups, and it was right then. Hey, you got your hands down. You're resting. Your elbows on your knees. 25. It was a situation like this. But if you were to remove that, if you were to remove the walls, if you were to remove the sport and somebody did that, you're outside, you're at the shopping mall, you're in a parking lot, and you told somebody to get down and do 25 push-ups, as much as that might stand out, we do not have a crime taking place. If you took down the walls and you took down the sport and you're in the supermarket or you're in the parking lot, right, somebody comes up with a cattle prod, it's a very fascinating topic to me. There's so many things that take place in fighting and take place in sport where you combine those two. Like, for example, the sport of hockey that people will swear to you that they love, they don't. You start quite, why do you like hockey? What's so fun about it? Why are you watching this game? Why did you enjoy last night's game? Every time, and I do mean 100% of the time, it's because a fight broke out or they think that a fight might break out. And that's always peculiar to me. Hockey would sell out arenas thinking that maybe a fight would break out. They'd be so excited when it did. And I'm kind of going, hey, why don't you go to a martial arts event? Like, for sure, that very fight that you're hoping, that you're watching painfully, as guys are skating around the eye, moving this puck, painfully watching, hoping a fight will break out. If you go to a UFC or an MMA event, for sure it will. But it didn't work that way. There's something about a fight breaking out where it's not supposed to break out that's very compelling. Where they clear the bench. They clear the bench in baseball. I mean, it is the highest rated of any baseball event you could get. More people watch a highlight of the benches clearing and coming onto the field than they would a grand slam home run. There's something about when it's not supposed to happen but it does. And I've never understood how in hockey, when guys start punching, they start beating each other up. I've never understood how nothing happens. That's a crime. There's police there. Why are they not arresting him? I mean, I've legitimately wondered that. And the police and the announcers and everybody else will default to, well, that's hockey, and the referee will get involved when he's ready. And if he sent him to the box, then that's the end of it. And I'm always thinking, no, no, it's not. That's a crime. That's not within the rules. That's against the law. But there's something about when it's a sporting event that it doesn't count. It's not applied the same. It's a very curious question for me. I saw the video. I saw the video. I saw the cattle prod. I heard the coach say that he would use it. I saw all of those things, but do I believe it? Would it work with you? And then think about it the other way too, not just as the athlete. If you were the coach and you had a pupil that wasn't doing a technique the way you thought was best, would you, as a matter of discipline, use the cattle prod on them? It's very interesting. It's a tough business model, but I imagine it's very tough to create a world champion. And he was able to do that. So we will leave this in the hands of the jury. Drink is two plus C plus Israel Adesanya. My partner's DraftKings got this thing listed. Adesanya is officially the favorite. It's minus 130, Drinkus. Plus 110. Now, if you're ever given a prediction for the fight, like, the boys know who's going to win. The boys always know who's going to win. Every rare occasion, an athlete will go out and he'll perform outside of his level. He'll perform out of his gloves. I'll give you a great example, but nobody was more surprised that Justin Gaethje beat Tony Ferguson than Justin Gaethje. That's the truth. In that moment, Justin was not what he felt prepared to fight. It was a shorter notice. Tony was on top of his game. I'm just sharing with you. Goes out there and wins every single round. Everybody sits back and goes, wow, that was incredible. But no one was more surprised than Justin. And I give you that because when you're trying to handicap these things, the press conference is very important. The face-off is wildly important. The body language is super important because both guys are going to learn to be very good actors. They're not only trying to convince the other person, they're not only largely trying to convince you, the viewing audience, they're trying to convince themselves. And the guy that would win the fight, or that they both athletes believe are going to win the fight, the day they sign a bout agreement can change by the time the press conference rolls around, and it can change yet again by the time the fight rolls around. So I'm always trying to guess. And if they ever let you know, if somebody has a tell that lets you know they don't believe that winner is going to be them, we can pick right up on it. And the reason I go to that, Drinkus let us know he didn't think it was going to be him. The first time they were going to fight, the fight was agreed to. The number one contenders match had taken place. Izzy had flown in from a different continent to sit in the front row, to get into the ring, to have a face-off with what would be his opponent. And it might have been Whitaker, and it might have been DDP. But the run of show isn't going to change. Izzy, sit here. When the fight ends and Bruce Buffer says these words, go up the stairs and face off, right? I mean, it's one of these things where it could have been Whitaker. And it could have been DDP. In that case, it was DDP, and there's Adesanya. And DDP did not do the fight. In fact, everything that he had said leading into this fight and how badly he wanted it, it was gone. He not only didn't take the fight, he wasn't shy about it. He wasn't shy in the least about saying, I become number one contender. I'm almost as good as I told you all. Right. I've told you guys I was the best. Well, now I've made it to the next best thing, and I'm not going. We'll do it another time. He never really gave a full account. Like, it wasn't a well-planned alibi. Well, I made my shoulder, or I got the cracked ribs, or I got a wedding schedule. Like, to this day, it wasn't the world's best flinch. It was pretty openly, in front of everyone, a flinch. But does he still feel that way? Right? It's very interesting. And not only is Du Plessis, at least in our minds, a lot better than we were giving him credit for, there's an overarching question mark on where's Izzy? Where is Izzy at? Izzy appears to really not like Dricus. If history is the greatest indicator to the future, if we go back and we look at some very legitimate grudge matches that Adesanya had, he steps to that occasion. That is a circumstance where Izzy does his best. One of the things, if you were to look at the Sean Strickland performance and think that that wasn't Izzy's best performance, well, one thing that was missing was genuine conflict. Sean Strickland was ranked number 6. They hadn't gone outside of the top 5 for a title contender in a meaningful period of time. Like, that wasn't really on Izzy's radar. So when it became Sean, there wasn't a genuine animosity there. To the fact that when Sean got the jump on him and they offered a rematch, Izzy turned it down. He just didn't have, it just wasn't the one. It wasn't personal before, it wasn't personal during, it hasn't become personal now. And that's an ingredient that Izzy needs, and it sure does seem to be there with DDP. But we've also never seen Izzy take a break. We've never seen him say, hey, I need a minute. I'm taking my oars out of the water. I also feel that DDP has gained some major steam. Now, the truth will never come out, or the fighter can never tell it. Like, when Izzy stepped into the ring in front of the world and squared off with DDP and DDP backed down, there would be nothing shameful about DDP coming out and saying, yes, that's exactly what happened. I realized in that moment I got over my skis. I was surprised and happy for all of the trash I talked to just get the fight with Whitaker. I was somewhat blown away when I beat Whitaker. I am high in this moment of I got a fight, I want a fight, and now it's propelling me to the ultimate fight. It was too much, too fast. There would be nothing wrong with him coming out and saying it. You guys would even find it interesting. There's just not a fighter who can. There is not a fighter that can ever show or ever admit, and I don't know why. I feel like that's something to overcome, right? Like, if you were always confident, you always wanted to fight, you haven't really done anything. You didn't achieve anything. You didn't fight. If there wasn't a battle and an obstacle in your way, even if it was your own self, it was your own emotion, it was your own confidence and belief in training methods, if none of those were ever in your way, you did not fight. And I know people like this, and they go a really long way. And that's called aggression. Aggression is when it goes both ways. Fighting is when it's coming back at you. So there would never be anything wrong with a fighter saying, yes, that time, that moment, that's what we had to work on. That was a surprise for me. That was something I hadn't seen. That's something I didn't know about. I worked on it. I've overcome it. There would never be anything wrong with that. But the story will never be told the way that I'm telling it. There'll never be a time that Dricus is going to come out and say, yes, when Izzy stepped in there and we're face to face and now there's nothing between us except a plane ticket to Australia and a weigh-in, I decided it wasn't time. And I tell you that because we don't know as much as we think. And I don't know which fighter is going to buckle this time. I know that they know. I know the boys know. They always know. They always have a pretty good idea, even without touching somebody else. I've seen this a number of times. I can just share that with you. As strange as the concept might be, but I've been in practice rooms and we've worked out for an hour and I could tell you in specific numerical order who is where in this room. And that room could tell me right back and we'd have the same list. And as I ran and watched the workout, several of those guys never touched one another. They were in different parts of the room. But I've seen it a number of times where if you put X amount of people in a room and you go for an hour, everybody knows who's where. And you know it too. I could ask you right now who the baddest dude in school was when you were in eighth grade. You all know that answer. But if I ever asked you what tournament, what did you see? Who did you see? You couldn't answer that part of it. If I asked you who was the baddest dude in school, your junior year. If I asked you who was your senior, right? Like, there's just a way of knowing. And it does very much feel like those tables are starting to turn. It does very much feel like there is a confidence that is starting to grow. And as we get closer and closer to Izzy versus Duplessis, I'm curious in the train. I'm curious with who's next. DraftKings is giving the nod to Izzy, but you know what? In all fairness, DraftKings always does. I could not tell you a time that DraftKings had Izzy as an underdog. By example, off the top of my head, he was a 6-1 favorite to beat Sean Strickland. By the way, DraftKings, right off the top of my head, Izzy was a 2-1 favorite to beat Alex Pereira. When Izzy lost to Alex Pereira and they booked the rematch, DraftKings returned Izzy to a 2.5-1 favorite. They kept him as a 2.5-1 favorite in a rematch against a guy that they'd already seen him fight. There are not very many times in Izzy's life where anybody questions him. There are not very many times in Izzy's life where a fellow opponent questions him. They generally concede, and they're generally right. Because my theory that the boys know is true. DraftKings pretty good at this game too. And they still feel Izzy has an edge on Duplessis. But the night that Duplessis beat Robert Whittaker, Duplessis was a 3-1 underdog. These two faced off, and the only one that knew, I came out and told you guys, that fight's not happening, at least not in August. I came out and told you guys, as soon as DDP and Izzy faced off, we've lost him. We've lost DDP. I watched it get up and leave. I came and told you instantly, that fight's not going to happen. They're going to need to turn to a backup. They need to turn to Strickland. I told you this, but DraftKings didn't listen, and they put out a line. And it was 3-1. 3-1. For a fight that was scheduled in August of last year and booked into July. 3-1 favorite was Israel Adesanya. But something's changed. Something's changed. Both guys have had a fight. Both guys have had a meaningful rest. The location has changed. Is he still the favorite according to DraftKings, but just barely? And it does feel as though something, amongst the fighters themselves, it feels as though something tone-wise is changing. Mates, UFC 305 is going to be like two frogs in a sock, and you can get in on all the action live from down under at DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of UFC. The middleweight title is on the line for the main event, but the card is stacked full of True Blue, Ridgey, Didge, Blokes, and Sheilas. And speaking of stack, if you're new to DraftKings, listen up. New customers, bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the code CHAIL. That's code CHAIL. For new customers to get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. UFC 305, it's gonna be a good time, mates, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. See eligibility terms and responsible gaming resources at dkng.co/MMA.
Kim Welsh yells, "You gotta go, Aljo," and Merab is upset. Now, I did do some investigative work on this because Merab had come up to O'Malley in what seemed to be almost an apology. And you got to understand, when the video comes on, these two are backstage, and this is all I get to witness. Merab comes up to Sean, he shakes his hand. He's being cordial, but he also lets Sean know, "I am irritated, but I'm actually irritated with your coach." I don't know where that has to do with. I mean, I don't know where that's coming from. I follow Tim, I follow O'Malley, I follow Merab, and I did not know this until Merab says it to Sean in that moment. And Sean says, "Why don't you go tell my coach? My coach would really love that." And Merab makes a comment like, "Oh, I would love to beat up your coach." And O'Malley's like, yeah, he would really love that too. Go tell him that. He will kill you. It was something along these lines. But now I realize that there's some kind of heat and I got to get to the bottom of it. So, all right. Rewind. Boston, Massachusetts. Sean O'Malley versus Aljo Sterling. Tim Welsh, who's in the corner of O'Malley, yells, you got to go, Aljo. Those are the exact words. You got to know the words. And I'm doing my best to portray the tone. And it wasn't hostile. It was along the lines. Let me practice for you guys. Are you ready? You got to go, Aljo. It was along those lines. It wasn't overly loud. It most certainly wasn't provocative. It wasn't rude and or mean. And those were the exact words. Is there any way to say those words, regardless of tone, and have that be unsportsmanlike and or provocative? It's a question for you. Now, the answer is yes, very easily. And do you want to know how? If the person that heard you and is authoring the statement, in this case, Marab, speaks a different language. That's when everything goes out the window. That's when you don't know what the tone is and you don't know why and what his experiences were for you gotta go Aljo to be upsetting to him. And guess what happened, by the way? Right after, Coach Tim Welsh yells, you gotta go Aljo. Aljo attempts to shoot, at which point Sean puts him down, takes his title away. So they're all kind of tied in, but they seem enough of a coincidence to me. And I just want to know, I haven't had that happen before. Marab weighed in on this. Other people were like me, where they witnessed this and they started doing investigative work. So now Marab has had to speak on it. And he says, if you did that in any other sport, if you did that in basketball, if you did that in soccer, you would be disqualified. You would be penalized for unsportsmanlike conduct. Is he right? Is he right? Because I haven't seen it. I don't know of a time in any other sport, and I'm just trying to judge the words. Now, for a coach to be talking to an opposing athlete, that in and of itself could, within, say, basketball, for example, the example Marab gave, could be taken as unsportsmanlike. But what if you say it with that tone? Oh, and by the way, it's a positive. You've got to go. Let's exchange go with a like word that other sports score. You got to get a basket. You got to get a touchdown. You got to get a goal. It would seem to me that there was something positive, but I don't believe that Tim misspoke. I don't believe that he was attempting to be positive for Aljo. I won't maintain that. I do. But does he have a history of it? Oh, and by the way, it was just coincidental that Aljo attempted to make a shot right after he said this and Sean caught him. So then it looks like a brilliant move. And there's somewhere within all of this that Marab thinks that it's disrespectful. And I want to know where you lie, because everybody has their own code. And I would never speak poorly to a coach. Now, when I was coming up and I was coming after opponents in a way that our sport hadn't seen, my coach, Clayton Hires, never talked to me about it. He never told me you're disrespectful. He never told me you're not honoring martial arts. He never did that. But he did tell me one time, you don't speak to a coach. If the coach has something to say, he can say it to me. If we have an issue with the coach, I will say it to him. You don't. You keep it within athletes. It was a very quick comment. He said all of that in a couple of sentences. So this became my code. But I was also instructed to that. And it's a very different spot because Tim fought himself. Tim is a fellow fighter. So the dynamics start to change. And I would love to know what exactly Tim meant. Was he yelling to Aljo? If he was yelling to Aljo, was he doing it to prompt Aljo to take an action that perhaps he wouldn't have already if Aljo heard it? Would have Aljo mistake the voice or been confused or reacted upon it thinking it was his own coach? Like there's all these different moving parts that I think is a coincidence. I think Tim yelled it. I think Aljo made a motion. I think Sugar Sean hit him, fighted it, and he took his belt. That's what I think, but I'm open to being wrong. And it sure has Marab worked up. I mean, Marab is talking more about this than he is to his fight. And everybody seeks motivation from whatever place you can find it. It does not matter what you do in life. It doesn't matter how wonderful it sounds. Like, you think flying and traveling and checking hotels and being on the beach, like, if I tell you that, you're going to think, oh, my God, that's amazing. Oh, yeah, I'd work all year to have 2 weeks. That sounds like a vacation. Okay, great, but now let's say you're the pilot. You're doing the exact same thing, but you have to be there, and you have to check in. You have to be on that plane. You have to go to this different destination, right? It's like a perspective issue, and you got to squeeze that motivation wherever you can, and Marab appears to be getting it from a disrespect that he feels Tim Wells showed to his friend and training partner, Aljo. But is he right? Was it disrespectful? Was it rude? What did Tim mean by it? Did Tim's plan unfold perfectly? Was that the first time he's done it? Did he do that at other times in the match? Has he done it in other matches where he's giving instruction to the opponent? Oh, and by the way, it's positive, right? Hey, go get him. Good luck. You gotta go, Aljo. It's compelling to me. What exactly was meant? What exactly does Marab hear when he heard that? Did it have anything to do with the match? Why is Marab upset? Like, there's all of these different questions. And I want to get to the bottom of it. And I'm going to be at the Sphere. And I'm going to see these guys. For one way or another, I'm going to find out. I am disgusted. All right. Now, Ariel Helwani. I used to have a show with Ariel, and I used to carry him. On the weight of my shoulders, I would carry Ariel. He never thanked me. And I didn't really need thanked. Like, I wasn't asked there to be there by him. I was asked by somebody else. Like, I didn't really need a thank you from Ariel. It would have been fine. I would have taken one, and I would have told him I'm very happy to work with him. But Ariel just sent out a tweet. This is the grossest thing I think I've... I can't remember reading something that I hate more than this tweet. The tweet says, covering these Olympic Games, an institution like CBC Olympics. And I got to tell you, right out of the gate, it becomes a little bit confusing. Like, Ariel is Canadian, but he operates within the United States. And so I never know. When I see Ariel, I always think of America, but then he'll remind you that it's Canadian. So I get confused when he's covering the Olympics. Are you just covering the Olympics as a whole? Are you covering them for America? Are you covering the Canadians? Turns out the answer is he was covering the Canadians. Okay, that's great. That's great. But I'm just sharing. He then says, it has been a career and a life highlight. So right there, he's made it very clear that he put his ever so brief experience of 14 days plus travel time in front of the show that he had with me. A career and a life highlight. This experience has been... I'm embarrassed to even read this. I cannot believe he sent this out. This experience has been so rewarding and refreshing. Oh, really? By rewarding, you mean the check that they wrote you. That's what you got out of this, correct? And refreshing, I don't even know what that means. I relate that with drinking a cold lemonade on a hot day. I must say, I don't really know what refreshing means. But for Ariel, this has been the most rewarding and refreshing of experiences. He fell in love with these athletes. Now, isn't that sweet? He fell in love with these athletes. Now, I don't like to misuse that word. I reserved that word specifically for my wife. I don't tell any other girl that. But that can be a personal thing. Some people are a little looser with love. It would just seem love of any kind when you go back and understand that the games were 14 days, plus perhaps travel, that you fell in love rather quickly. And if your love, which he says he fell in, is plural, it takes away from it. Would you agree with me? Like, if you didn't have a strong and positive emotion towards one, you had it to a masses, is that, by definition, equal to love? I don't know, but this is what he says. Their spirit, their soul, I'm having a hard time, guys. This is so hard to read. Oh, my God. He fell in love with these athletes, their spirit, their soul. I don't know what that means. I got to come back to it. What is a spirit and soul? Can I call a spirit and soul? Can I look up a spirit and soul? Does a spirit and soul have a Facebook page that I may go to for further reference? Well, you fell in love with their spirit and their soul. All right. Their determination. Their grace. Also very admirable. Now that part I will drink to. I do appreciate that very much about the Olympics. And the incredible irony is that the athletes weren't paid, but the announcer is paid to cover the athletes. I do see where there's an appreciation that needs to be shown, and you don't fully know how to do it, but you want to. And I also would see where if it was a positive experience, which is very sought after, and only comes once every 4 years, like sticking your nose up the boss's ass, I can see where that would come in handful, but it comes back to the point that I previously made, which is only comes around once every 4 years. Is it really worth selling out in the form of this tweet for? Is there a word here that I could take sincerely? This was an experience of a lifetime. He fell in love with their spirit and souls. Their grace is admirable. All right, let's move on. I'll really miss covering them. Yeah, I'm sure you will miss the check that came along with you covering them. I understand. Truth be told. Okay, now we're getting into it. Forget everything except. Truth be told, their purity and innocence reminded me a lot of MMA fighters. Truth be told. This reminded you of MMA fighters? You think MMA fighters? What MMA fighter have you met that was like this sweet and innocent, truth be told? He uses the MMA to cut in line at his local strip club. He's not going to burn the house down and not have to pay his tab on the way out like everybody else. What innocence? What is he talking? The innocence reminded him of MMA fighters. Okay, but this was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Wow. A trip that I'll never forget. I don't know how to interpret that. This is a guy that covers sport for a living and makes a very good living. So he's in Paris covering sport, which is, he does for a living, and he says it was one of the greatest experiences of my life. Do I interpret that this was the largest paycheck that he got for covering sport? I don't understand. What part of this could have been so great? How could this possibly be a sincere tweet? I will go back to my regular job, which is covering athletes and getting paid for it. I will go back to my regular job very soon. I will leave Paris filled with pride and gratitude. Man, we got a lot of buzzwords being thrown around here. We got spirits and soul, and we got love, and we got admirable. We got innocence. Now we've got pride and gratitude. All right, fair enough. And that is not always common for me. Now, how do I interpret that? That isn't always common for you. You met these athletes, you got paid to cover them, they're from various sports, you cover sports for a living, and you don't generally leave with gratitude. What was so special about this? I'm truly curious. I would truly like to know what was so great about this Olympic experience. And I don't want a buzzword. What happened? What happened specifically? There's no specifics in this. I'm embarrassed. Oh, we got to move on. But this was one of the greatest experiences of my life and a trip that I will never forget. Again, very strong language. But in the pursuit of getting a job that only comes along every 4 years, it feels a little bit heavy. Oh, here we go. Now we're getting to it. Are you ready? The one line that I will take with sincerity, I would love to do it again someday. Yeah, I had a feeling. I had a feeling you would. Here are some highlights from our show, Paris Tonight, which captures the essence of what we set out to do. I hope you enjoy it. Did somebody else write that? This can't be real. First off, a tweet, by the way, is not meant to be that long. It's just not meant for that. All I have done is read this with brief commentary, and it's taken me the better part of 10 minutes. That's not what Twitter's designed to do. And then to go back and to show a highlight of something else that you did. No, moreover, that somebody else did. Once it's done, It's one of those things, like news and sport have to be in the moment. It really can't be what's already been. And where would you get the idea that these athletes are innocent? Where would you get the idea of their grace and their humility and their purity? Oh my God, their love and their spirit and their soul. I'm just staring at this thing. I am disgusted. This is the most disgusting tweet possibly of my illustrious time on Twitter. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chail, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chail, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chail. Any athlete who competes at the highest level will tell you the importance of having a great team. Even in individual sports like boxing, wrestling, MMA, there is always a team of coaches and training partner who helped you get to the top. Think about Simone. Think about Serene. Think about Tiger. Think about Mike Tyson, Mayweather. They all have a coach. And the same thing goes with business. You need a solid team of trusted and knowledgeable people to help you advance if you're in the e-commerce business. Let Shopify be that teammate that helps you level up. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going through. Businesses that sell more, sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/chail, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/chail, like the famous gangster, to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/chail. Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys, and how does my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss like the majority of the male population does, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that actually work, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized, chewable oral spray and serum treatment options so you can find what works best for you. Reaching out for help in this area can feel a bit embarrassing, but Hims has made this process so dignified and simple. All you have to do is answer a few questions online and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. No in-person visits to the doctor or pharmacy are needed. The whole process is 100% online. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, so if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get that confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/chail. That's Hims. HIMS.com/chail, like the famous gangster. For your personalized hair loss treatment options, HIMS.com/chail. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information. Jake Paul says, I'm going to enter the 2028 Olympics in boxing. I can't tell you of an idea that I like more. I cannot tell you of an idea that I would get behind more. Truly, of any story in sport, for me personally, I would love it. It's going to take 4 years. Olympics are coming to Los Angeles. Where would he stack up, by the way? Like boxing has shown to not be what we thought. But when Francis Ngannou, who had never done this sport, went 10 rounds with Tyson Fury, and a number of people, including one licensed judge, said he won. Right, when Conor McGregor, who has no amateur background in boxing, let alone professional, went a half of an hour with Floyd, we find out this isn't what we think. But what is it? What is it exactly? Could Jake Paul do this? And I'm so intrigued by it. Like, there's some sports that you had to start when you were a kid. And for the most part, people that have real success, somebody within their family got them started. Or maybe in a relative was their first coach and it all started in their living room. Like that is very common within sport. Not to mention Olympic sport. It seems like any school you went to. You'd be grade school, middle school, high school, you'd be college. Any school you went to. I personally never set foot in a school that didn't have a basketball court. I personally have never been to a park, and that is without exaggeration, that didn't have a basketball court. Even if it was makeshift, half court, quarter court. You have a regulated hoop up there, bring a ball, you can play. But if you have a sport like boxing, how are you going to get somebody to walk in the very first day? I mean, how are you going to get a kid that's walking by? It's not like there's an advertisement for it. They don't have any money. You didn't see it on a billboard. You didn't turn on your television and hear great things. You didn't start in junior high. All you had to do was go into the locker room and change your clothes. You didn't dream of going to college because you were getting a scholarship. And I mean, like in all fairness, think about it from that perspective. How would you even get started in boxing? And then if you decided you did want to, you were one of the rare. You did see it on TV. You did see something that made you think, I want to do that. Do you know where a boxing club's at? Literal question. I want you to ask yourself that. Do you know where a boxing club is at? If you wanted to start boxing today, is there a place? And no, most of you said no. The ones of you that said yes and think you just fooled the system know of a place where you could box. You know of a martial arts gym or something, they got like a boxing class. I'm talking about a boxing gym. There's not very many of them. Would you know where to get the gloves? Would you know where to get a mouthpiece? Would you know where to get the cup? I mean, it's one of these things. No, you don't. Would you know where to get the shoes? No, you don't. Don't lie. You do not know where to go get boxing shoes. No, you don't. So now imagine that you get into that sport. And what's really interesting is if you don't get into it and somebody doesn't get you into it and you don't get into it early, it's very rare that somebody is going to get into it late because you're now getting matched up with kids. We will see this in mixed martial arts where somebody gets on it and realizes how important wrestling is. I got to add that to my game. I got to start wrestling. They're in their 20s though. And they don't know where to go. It's exactly like the boxing example I just gave you. They don't know of a wrestling gym or of a club. Even if they get to the point where I want to do this, I'm going to make the commitment, they wouldn't know where to go. And you can't wrestle very often if you're not part of an institution. If you don't go to school, high school, college, something like this that has wrestling, has a mat room, you're generally not going to get into it. So let's say you did go and find it later in life. You're now going to have to go into a room, into a sport that you admittedly don't know, and do it against kids. And when you're on TV and you're one of the baddest dudes in the world, or at least perceived to be, it is a very hard thing to humble yourself and go into a room where 15 and 16 and 17-year-old kids are going to whip you. But there's also no way to learn it or to get better. And I ask it from this perspective, can Jake Paul go in and box? Can he just walk in? Can he, I think he started this journey when he was 24 years old. If he walked in and says, I want to be an Olympian, I'm willing to work hard, I'm an adult. If I don't succeed, if I fail to make the U.S. team, one, to make the team, I'm going to have to beat up children, which just means anybody under the age of 18. But to make the team, A majority of the participants are, in fact, under 18. So to make the team, I'm going to have to beat up children. But if I fail to make the team, I likely have lost to a child, which simply means anybody under 18. There are very few people that could humble themselves to go and do that. And if he does, I would love it. I would love that journey. It's a very different game. It really, where you're trying to touch somebody and you've only got a couple of parts of the body that you could score points, and you got him with a very specific part of the glove. Like, it's a different game than professional boxing where you're looking to damage. You still got the parts of the glove, you still got the parts of the body, but you're looking to damage that person as opposed to scoring points. I would love to see if he could do it. I could love to see if he would pursue it. I'm sharing with you why it is such an outside shot. Like, there has been nothing that Jake Paul has said that he hasn't done. We all thought this was a ruse from Jump Street. We all thought he was never going to get in there and box. Then when he did get in there and box, well, he's never going to box a real fighter. Then when he did box real fighters, well, he's never going to box a good real fighter. Then he gets in there with world champions. Well, he's never going to box a boxer, right? Like, it just kept changing. But Jake did everything that he said he was going to do. Now, this is a whopper. This is a massive one that no one else would do. Nobody else would take that on. It's not because we don't have other boxers that don't want to be in the Olympics or they don't hold the Olympics to a high adoration. It's not because of that. It's because of what happens if I fail. And what happens if I fail, it doesn't hurt your career. You don't get cut. Top Rank doesn't not sign you. Adidas doesn't drop your sponsor. It's none of those things. You will lose to a child, which just means anybody under 18. There's a high school kid out there that you're going to have to get up every day and train for. He's walking the halls. He's getting ready for geometry track class. He's hoping he's got enough money in his pocket to buy lunch. He will literally be a minor. And you're going to have to beat him. You're going to have to think about him. You're going to have to train for him. Or you're not. And it's a wildly difficult situation. You will meet people along the way that you'll respect. And they bang their chest and they say, I'll fight anybody. I don't care who it is. And you keep giving them higher ranked guys. You keep giving them bigger challenges. And sure enough, they step out there and do it. But you're misguided to believe that they're actually as advertised, that they'll actually fight anybody. There are certain mindsets where that's very easy. They prefer to be the underdog. Not to mention, what do I have to lose? Not to mention, I have everything to gain. They like that struggle. There's certain mindsets. It's admirable and it's rare, and they do go into a quality of tough guy. I admit that. But what I'm sharing for you, what you don't know about them, is they can't go the other way. They can be ranked number 8, and they will step in there with number 2 on a moment's notice. But when they get to number 2, they won't step in there with number 8. It's wildly different. It's wildly rare that you meet somebody that actually will take on anybody, anytime. And this is hard to believe. There is no other boxer that has attempted this. There's no other adult. I've been curious, what would happen if Conor would have done it? Could he made the team in Ireland? He went 30 minutes with Floyd. Can he go 3 rounds with the kids in Ireland to make the team? If he made the team, could he medal? How shiny? Could he get the gold? I'm just curious of this. Francis says he loves to box, says he's under contract with the UFC. He could go amateur box all he wanted. We've only had one guy ever do this, and it was Little Nog, and he won the national championship of Brazil. That was fun. I was curious. This is a whopper, though, that Jake is setting down. Of all the claims that he's ever made, this might be the hardest. In many ways, it's easier to fight Mike Tyson in front of the whole world. In many ways, it is easier to do that than fight an unknown high school sophomore. And Jake says he's going to do it. He has never made a claim that he hasn't backed up. And I've never held him to it. The fight game's fun. Do what you want and say what you want. I'm going to hold him to this one because I want it. I think it's awesome. The question is, do I really think he's going to do it? Official prediction. I was over at DraftKings. This line has not moved, at least not significantly, not from Jump Street. Adesanya has been the favorite ever so slight. I remember talking about this a few days ago, and Adesanya, it was a negative 130 to Dricus, who was a plus 110. Guess what? That's exactly what it is right now. And that's interesting to me. It's interesting because when we had a number one contenders match on International Fight Weekend of last year, Dricus versus Whitaker, a true number one contenders match, like we say number one contenders very often in the sport. If you ever audit that statement, we don't hold to it very well. We were going to in that case, because the show was already booked. The tickets were already moving. Adesanya was already top of the bill, and he was in the front row that evening to step face-to-face and have his first ever eye-to-eye with his soon-to-be opponent. It was going to be the winner, Whitaker, Dricus du Plessis. Adesanya, at that point in time on DraftKings, was his 3-1 favorite. So now it's gotten closer, but he's right there. And whenever you're looking at this, and I know that you guys will agree with me, you want to look at it from two perspectives. Physically, who's better? Which of these fighters is better at fighting? Because at the end of the day, that's what it boils down to. And you can talk about a guy's resume or what he did in boxing, or you can talk about his grappling, you can tell me about his Division I days, you can tell me about his run through Abu Dhabi. Like, you can do all of these other different things. You can talk about how he's training, how he's sleeping, and he's eating greens, and he started eating more meat, or he started eating less meat. All of this stuff that's silly. One guy's a better fighter than the other guy. Which one is it? Like, you have to start with that. But then you'll also realize, like, your time within the sport, you'll realize that who's better. Who's got the better DNA? Who's more athletic? Does play a part for X amount of time. 4 to 6 minutes. 4 to 6 minutes, you're having an athletic competition. Anything over that, you're in the tough guy business. Who's tougher than who? Who needs it more? Like, motivation's one is that you don't just wear your arm tougher than everybody else. Sometimes you gotta be. You don't have a choice. It's your bread and meat. You don't win. You don't eat. And there's times in your life where that changes and your table is going to be full regardless of the outcome. It can change. So if you're a better and you're handicapping this thing, you're going to sit back and you got to answer both of those questions. DraftKings collectively has come to the conclusion that Adesanya is better, but they're less sure now than they were a year ago. He went from 3-1 to a plus 130. Dricus went from a 3-1 dog to a plus 110. Minus 130 to plus 110. And I'm sharing this because there's a lot of ways for Dricus to go. There's many paths for him. It turns out that Dricus is a star, right? It turns out that he is star quality. It turns out that he's charming. It turns out that he's handsome. It turns out that he's likable. It turns out that he can sing. Like, there's all these things we didn't know about Dricus. Where he is a pretty fitting replacement to one of the biggest stars the sport's ever had in Adesanya. And we didn't know those things. But there's also a number of ways to get him back into a title opportunity. All the way from Izzy wins and there's an immediate rematch, all the way to Izzy wins and Izzy walks away from the sport and the title becomes vacated, all the way to Izzy wins and it becomes a Chimaev Whitaker. Like, there's all sorts of that never discount Dricus. But I don't know if you turn the table, if you have the same thing you could say about Izzy. Right? So is that good or bad? It would seem to me the pressure is on Izzy. It would seem to me that Izzy needs to win. And many people that are strategists in the game of war believe and create an environment where you must succeed. But as fun as that is to say, as an observer of the sport, I can tell you the guy with the pressure buckles more times than he succeeds. The guy that's feeling that weight and who has to proverbially has to win doesn't because of that. It's on his mind. There's no way back. He's burned his boats. Any expression that you want to use, as cool as it sounds when it works out, more times than not, it doesn't. Would you disagree with me that Izzy is the one that has it stacked against him? Would you disagree with me with the opportunities that Izzy has been given, with the year removed from the sport? with the guys just for parity reasons that Izzy's already fought and beat. Don't forget, guys, he not only cleaned out the division, he was starting to lap the division. Israel Adesanya is the athlete the term lapping the division was coined for. And DraftKings still sees him as a favorite. Two sides to it. Who's better at fighting? And it would seem as though this is the oldest question book. You got a striper versus the grappler. But I don't see Du Plessis doing a lot of grappling. I remember when he took Whitaker down. He didn't have a lot of grappling attempts in that. He did pretty well on his feet. And I remember when he got into some wrestling with Sean Strickland. But it wasn't overwhelming. A lot of it was done on the feet. He's a surprisingly, I'm talking about Dricus here, he's a surprisingly good striker, wasn't he? For surprisingly good pressure. Surprisingly good at moving forward. Does he need it more? Does he need it less? Right? That's the other side of the coin. DraftKings had Israel Adesanya as a 3-1 favorite, and the only thing that Izzy has done since that line come out is he fought Sean Strickland and what we all dismissed as a bad performance. So we all chalked it up to. And it's not as though Dricus and Whitaker don't have common opponents. As a matter of fact, they have two common opponents. They have Robert Whitaker and they have Sean Strickland. And if you were to go look at those and you were to juxtapose, and people love to tell you that MMA math doesn't work, it works all the time. It seldomly doesn't work. It is literally the single best tool that we have for projecting a fight, or in this case, betting on a fight, like DraftKings is doing. You think the odds makers over at DraftKings didn't take into account that Dricus fought Sean Strickland, and so did Izzy, and the same thing can be said as Robert Whitaker, and they didn't look at those performances? And it's tough when you start to factor all those things in. It's tough that once you start to accept those and you let those in, you don't just do it as the childish way of going, oh, this guy's going to kick this guy's ass. This guy's so much better. Well, you really got to think about it. You're going to part with your money. You're going to go over to DraftKings. You're going to part with your money. You're going to put $100 down. And you understand they're going to get into championship rounds. You understand that it's not just a stick'em contest about who's quicker. You understand that you got one guy in Dricus that's coming forward. You understand that you got a guy in Israel Adesanya that loves to go side to side. You understand that the grappling resume is going to favor Dricus, but the counter grappling resume, what are you going to say to Izzy? Who's been in there with Yoel Romero? Who's been in there with Brunson? Who's been in there with Gastelum? It's a very interesting contest. They're fighting over something extremely personal. The topic of this fight and the nature that has become personal melts the airwaves to the point that the media loves it when it happens, but they stand back. They don't interfere. They don't get involved. They'll show you a clip or they'll give you a quote. The writer won't give you an interpretation of the quote. They'll set it down and walk away. It's that hot. It's that personal. And that's the biggest thing I think Izzy has in his favor, by the way. I have not seen Adesanya in an environment where it was personal, where he didn't shine. I maintain for you the number one ingredient that was missing in Izzy versus Strickland for Izzy is it wasn't personal. He had no beef with Sean. He didn't really have an interest in creating it. Sean wasn't supposed to be the opponent. Dricus was. This is very personal. DraftKings is favoring Adesanya, and you've come to me, you've come to Uncle Chael to put the curse on somebody. I believe Israel Adesanya wins his fight and reclaims the middleweight championship of the world. Alright everybody, that's it for today's episode. Thank you for listening. Each and every Tuesday, and it's UFC 305 Fight Week. So you know there'll be a bunch of drama for us to talk about on Friday. I will talk to you then. And until then everybody, I'm Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome.
Bernie Moreno is looking out for himself, not us. Moreno is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Moreno has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Register to vote by October 7th at OhioVoterGuide.org and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by AskMePeople, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.